Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what I like to refer to as our Thursday meeting show. Two professional bettors and handicappers join us. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We're going to get opinions from both guys here on the AFC and NFC championship games. With Brad, we'll talk Super Bowl look ahead lines as well. A little bit of college basketball with both guys. Maybe touch on the NBA with Rolf as well. So great show coming your way here today as we inch a little bit closer to conference championship weekend. Before we get into that, lots of great stuff over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you're checking out everything that gets posted on a daily basis over there. We've got so much stuff going on. Lots of great articles, daily betting trends, picks and previews, analysis articles, futures articles. Just so many things going on over there. Our matchup data section, sportsbook reviews, free contests where you win cash prizes. Check out what we have to offer at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. This and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 25, you get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here on this Thursday edition of the show. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
It's going well. Good to hear you, your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Good to chat with you as well, buddy. And you know what? Let's go ahead and start with something that you and I just have to talk college football. I think on pretty much every segment that you're on. I didn't mention it there in the intro, but our regular listeners of the show know that college football, your bread and butter, your true passion, something that you do year-round. And as you and I were kind of going over some stuff here for the segment this morning, made mention to me that you've already put out some futures and some week one plays for the 2018 college football season. You're getting a head start on the market there.
Yeah, to say the least. But, I mean, I know a lot of people probably roll their eyes and not thinking that there's value and, tying your money up for almost an entire year. But there is some value to be had. And, the two teams that I bet as far as future-wise, now, look, I think Alabama should be and deserves to be the overwhelming favorite. And I will shop around in different places in the state of Nevada and see if I can get a better ticket than 2-1, which is the current price of Alabama. If I can find a 3-1 or 4-1 at a shop in Mesquite, or if I go up to Reno sometime early spring or early summer and find some, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to bet Alabama to win the title. But I thought a couple of future tickets that were a little bit off. Michigan State's 40-1. I mean, this is a team that's won at least 10 games in six of the last eight seasons. They get both Ohio State and Michigan at home in conference play. If you're worried, I mean, they have beaten Michigan eight of the last 10 times they played. They've beaten Ohio State three of the last seven, and two of their four losses the last 7 years were by a single point. So I don't think there's any intimidation factor there. Plus, they're probably going to be the most experienced Power 5 team in the country, 19 returning starters. So I'm looking to probably hedge that bet if they make at least a Big Ten championship game or the playoffs, which they have made the playoffs just a few years ago at 40-1. The other team I thought was relatively cheap. I mean, for a team that's probably going to be favored in all 12 of their games, for a team that's won three straight conference championship games, I mean, the Oklahoma Sooners at 25-1. Yes, they lose Baker Mayfield, but, I mean, let's be honest. He was a walk-on coming out of high school, entering college. Kudos to him. He definitely was one of the biggest overachievers we've ever seen in college football history. But his replacement, Kyler Murray, was the number one prospect coming out of high school as far as a quarterback goes. Already has experience, a very talented player, and I think Oklahoma's very motivated for how that second half went in the Georgia game. So 25-1, a little cheap there. And then Five Dimes has some week one lines up. Look, they're low limits. You got to lay -120. But it is the time of year where, hey, there might be a few games that are probably off a touchdown. The one that I think is really off, Arizona against BYU. Arizona's laying about 7. Arizona would be just fine with Kevin Sumlin as the new head coach, especially with Khalil Tate coming back. I think BYU's head coach Sitake's on the hot seat. I think that's a very cheap number there. Arizona at home hosting BYU, lay the 7 if you can play it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And again, that's probably not a number that will be seven. And it's very interesting because one of the things I've been seeing on Twitter in the gambling community is that, you know, with Arizona hiring Kevin Sumlin, he's bringing back Yates as the defensive coordinator as well. You know, a lot of people may be looking to throw something on this team from a futures standpoint as well. I'm looking right now. I think it was 150-1 at five dimes right now. They have up numbers for all of the contenders. BetOnline just has an Alabama versus the field prop. Not seeing any futures at DSI. But Arizona may be a team that people kind of throw a little bit of investment on just to see what they can do and, you know, what may be a little bit weaker of a Pac-12 South this year. You figure it's going to take time at UCLA for Chip Kelly to put things together. USC, I mean, you know, they have talent year in and year out, but how much do you want to trust Clay Helton? How much do you want to trust them with, you know, the guys that they're losing, because they are losing some high caliber talent. So I think Arizona is a team that's going to have a lot of helium coming into the season, much like Washington did a couple of years ago. And we saw Washington make it into the college football playoff. Now, again, not the exact same situation. I think Chris Peterson, one of the best coaches in the country, but you know, that Arizona number is probably only going to climb, and so is their perception.
Oh, no question about that. Another thing I like from just a pure value aspect, there's a team that failed to cover the spread in each of their five games. I mean, they got a little overpriced in the marketplace after Khalil Tate, you know, jumped onto the scene. They won and covered like three or four games in a row, then got overpriced. And then, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty there. But, you know, look, I mean, Kevin Sumlin's not ideal, and Rich Rod, you know, had his moments, obviously, at West Virginia, even had his moments at Arizona. But I think there's a slight upgrade there. The fact that they're getting some continuity at the staff. And keep in mind, a lot of those guys, believe it or not, actually have worked with Kevin Sumlin in the past. So I think it's an ideal situation. Another year, and I think, Kevin, you look at Khalil Tate be a decent fit in that new offense. I think that is a team, and I think you hit the nail on the head. The major thing is USC is going to be down with all the talent they lost, and UCLA is probably in a rebuild mode, at least year one, as they're totally changing schemes both sides of the ball. I think it's an opportunity. Would not be shocked. Arizona makes a Pac-12 title game, which they did just a few years ago. And keep in mind, if you got 100-1, 150-1 ticket, I mean, you could start hedging in that Pac-12 championship game and make some money on a $100 ticket.
No, absolutely. And again, that is the chief goal of every futures bet that you make, to find a way to guarantee some sort of profit if you get into a position to hedge. And it'd be great for Arizona to shock the entire world and win at 150-1. They're probably not going to, but if you get them in that Pac-12 title game, and if they're in that position, you know, odds are it should be a pretty reasonable line, whether they play Stanford or Washington or maybe Oregon, you know, puts it all together here this year. You know, so it would be a reasonable line in that situation as well. So, you know, again, things that you want to look at, forecast for the future. There is one game on the board for five dimes I want to ask you about from a college football standpoint. And maybe this is kind of a square opinion on my part, but when I look at when I look at what Jeff Brohm did at Purdue, specifically what Nick Holt did with that Purdue defense, Purdue minus one against Northwestern there in that Thursday night game, that one looks a little bit cheap too.
Oh yeah. And they opened up plus one. Now that didn't take maybe one or two bets to flip over to minus one, but that's cheap. And especially I thought Northwestern overpriced because this was a team and people forget they didn't cover the bowl game. But prior to that, I mean, they're going to see Northwestern win 10 games on the season. And a lot of times as a program in Northwestern coming off a 10-win season, the next season is the time to fade them. And prior to the bowl game, it's a team that won and covered like seven straight games entering it. So I really like that one a lot. And keep in mind, Purdue had a great season year one under Jeff Brohm, but there was also some missed opportunity. I mean, they lost by a single point in the final seconds against Nebraska. They had another tough loss on the road against Rutgers by a couple of points. That very well could have been a 9-win team this year. So, and I think with what they'll have coming back, and especially at the wide receiver spot where they were really hurting entering this past season, they'll be improved. And I definitely think that line at minimum should be three. So that would definitely be one I'd hop on right now.
Were those nickel limits on those five dimes week one lines?
You know, last I heard only 100 or 200, and Mandalay minus 120 and only be able to get down 100 or 200. That was what they were allowing at the opener. Maybe they increase it to a nickel as they get more of a handle on them, but that's the tough part. You can't get a lot down and you got to lay minus 120. Even if the line's off 3 points, I would suggest maybe one or two bets there, and we'll see. But, you know, the great thing about that, and I know we're talking about it, and people ask me, well, what does it mean? Well, at least it gives you an idea of what the market perception is going to be on these teams. And I know it's a little limit and everything, but it's the first jumping off point where you see teams and where they're going to be at least initially in the marketplace. And you start adding up where the value is going to be, whether it be futures, whether it be, you know, when South Point opens up their week one lines or their game of the year or their season win totals. And that's the jumping off part and why I'm kind of intrigued by those early lines.
All right, let's move over to the NFL side of things here with the AFC and NFC championship games coming up this weekend. We'll start in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium, Jacksonville, New England. Patriots favored by 8.5, kind of the consensus number now. There are some nines out there, but it is very interesting to me, Brad, to see that this number has gone down to 8.5 at several shops, 8 at Bookmaker, which means those teasers with New England under 3 have come back into play. So that leads me to believe that there's some pretty significant sharp action out there forcing the books to adjust and, you know, leave themselves with some teaser exposure.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, we saw the money kind of come in on Jacksonville a little bit last week. And you definitely got to put it's the sharper, bigger side on Jacksonville. And I'll say this, they at least fit the mold of the teams that have given New England problems in the playoffs over the last decade. I mean, you remember Baltimore beating New England a couple of times. Great defense. You know, you don't do much at the quarterback spot and really get after Tom Brady at the line of scrimmage, similar to the both Giants teams that were coached by Tom Coughlin. You know, dominant front four, great pass defense for them. You know, they got a great pounder, you know, a guy that can really carry and tote the rock on the offense side of the ball, you know, similar to like Brandon Jacobs and Leonard Fournette. So at least they fit the mold of the team that's given New England problems. You know, obviously, I think there's a little bit more to be made than what's being made, I should say, about the Tom Brady hand injury that happened. I don't think that's that big of a deal, but no question about it. I think we can at least safely say, as we're doing this on Thursday, that the bigger, sharper money's on Jacksonville, especially like you mentioned. I mean, that is some definite teaser exposure there that the books are going to have. I'll probably end up teasing New England, but I just don't see too much of a value aspect as far as the side goes. I'm more on the total than anything.
No, I don't see a ton of value either because you've got this Jacksonville team, and I've talked about this throughout the week here, 6-for-6 in the red zone in the playoffs. They were a top-5 offense in the red zone. New England, for as bad as this defense appeared to be throughout the year, and it did get better at the tail end, they were very good at bowing their backs there in the red zone, keeping teams from getting 7. They had to settle for 3. If that's the situation that Jacksonville's in here, you have to figure there are going to be some problems, especially when you look at the areas in which Pittsburgh exposed them last week, specifically with Vance McDonald. I mean, Rob Gronkowski is 2, 3, 4, 5 times the player, you know, depending on your perception of Vance McDonald. So, you know, New England has some opportunities here to get the football out, make some moves down the field, as long as Tom Brady stays upright. And Brady gets it out so quick. Very, very smart guy. Reads the defense as well as anybody before the snap. You got to think he's able to get this thing out quick. But, you know, I mean, the interesting thing about this game, as well as the next game, is, you know, you kind of talk these games to death throughout the week because it's just two standalone games, biggest games in town, massive handles. We've really turned over every single stone for these games here on the shows this week, between the Tom Coughlin angle with Jacksonville, you know, between New England with both coordinators out there interviewing for head coaching jobs, with New England being a team that doesn't mind running it up in the fourth quarter. So, you know, everybody has everything that they need to make a bet here on this game. And I think it is significant that we are seeing the sharp position, you know, stand out pretty significantly on the Jacksonville side.
Yeah, and that's at this point, that's what you need to start following because we're down to just a few games left. These will be the, you know, along with the Super Bowl, you know, the 3 most bet games, most watched games of the entire season. So, you know, just generally speaking, the line should be right. And the only time where you catch some value is there might be some misperception in the marketplace, particularly from the public. And a lot of times these are the pros versus Joes types of games that you and you don't want to ever blindly bet on the Joes or the pro side of things. But when you got these high, very high handle type of games, more often than not, I like to be on the pro side of things because the one thing, the public handle, it can actually – create some value because there's so much more public betting going on right here that might be able to keep that line relatively in check there where the sharp side can't move it too much. But anytime you get a half point to a point line move here, especially against a very popular public team in New England, that to me pretty much tips the hand. Now, am I going to put out a Jacksonville bet or a strong bet? No. Am I going to put out a strong bet on any side or total in one of these games? No. And that even goes to the Super Bowl, you know, outside of Super Bowl prop plays. I just, anybody that has a relatively very strong play, I kind of scratch my head because in all reality, these should be some of the tightest lines and sharpest lines we've seen in the marketplace all year.
So what about the total here? You said that you've got a little bit of a stronger opinion on the total for this game. And as we look out there in the market right now, sitting 46 at Pinnacle, it's 46 at Bookmaker as well. This number's bounced around. It's been 46.5, 46, open 47, came down with some initial movement. Are you looking to follow that initial movement, or are you thinking that we're getting a high-scoring affair here?
No, I'm going with the movement. I'm going under, and here's where I think there's slight mispricing. I mean, that Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game was such an outlier last week, 45-42, that I think it's created a little bit of value on the under. And if you don't believe me, I mean, Jacksonville's highest totals line this entire season prior to this game, 42.5. So, you know, 46, 46.5, we're talking 3.5, 4 points higher than any totals line we've seen for Jacksonville this entire season. And on the flip side, you know, New England-Tennessee game, in all intents and purposes, probably should have went under last week. I mean, Tennessee on their final drive converted not one but two fourth and tens. I mean, the chances of that, probably 25% to make one. You times that by 25% on the second one, like a 1 in 16 chance that they make both, and that goes over the total by a point. So I think maybe a point of value here because of those two factors. And then I also look at it. I already mentioned Jacksonville fits the mold of a team that's given New England's offense a lot of problems. And then on the flip side, New England's defense, you already mentioned it, they're terrible at the first four or five games, the worst defense in the National Football League. Reality is they're still giving up yards, but in their last 13 games, most importantly to this total, most pertinent, they've allowed 14 points per game in their last 13 games. That's number one in the NFL. So, yeah, they don't statistical-wise, yards per play, you know, yards-wise and all that don't look great. But in the most important category, for the second season in a row, they're near the top of the NFL as far as points per game allowed. So I'm going with under 46, 46.5 is my official lean on that game.
All right, let's go to the NFC Championship game here where Minnesota takes on Philadelphia. Once again, Philadelphia, the sharp side, as the home dog. Pinnacle plus three, minus $1.13, minus three, plus 102 on the Minnesota side. So basically, we're seeing an indication that there's a chance, based on sharp money, that this number will come down to 2.5 at some places. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I thought the more value last week with Philadelphia catching the three at home against an inferior Atlanta team. That game should have been closer to pick. In my opinion, a huge mispricing. Now, obviously, lines have been adjusted after last week's game. But, I mean, I still got a home underdog here, the number one seed. First time it ever happened last week. It's not as rare as far as the championship game goes. But it's a team with a chip on their shoulder. Don't believe it. I mean, they're pulling out the dog, Max. So, I mean, Philadelphia can again play the disrespected home underdog role here. I mean, they're 4-0 against the spread as a home dog in the playoffs. The Vikings haven't been a great playoff road team. They're 2-11 straight up, 3-10 against the number. They've lost all three matchups against Philly in playoff meetings. For this particular game, look, I mean, raise your hand if you had the NFC Championship game decided between a quarterback battle between Nick Foles and Case Keenum prior to the season. I'm sure you'd have gotten maybe 1,000-1 odds there. I expect both game plans to be very conservative. You saw what happened. Minnesota's up. Case Keenum has a bad interception, takes a sack, gets him out of field goal range. I mean, Nick Foles, they throw it down the field deep first play of the game. He's struggling. They have four fumbles. They lose two of them. I don't think you can trust either quarterback here. You got a pair of top five defenses. The total reflects that at 38.5. I just, when you got a low total and you're telling me I'm going to lay 3 points on the road, I just don't think that's ideal. I'm leaning with the Eagles plus the three, and I would probably say bet it now because I wouldn't be a bit surprised it goes to 2.5.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it's trending that way. And what's interesting about this game is the perception in which people are going to view last week's wins. You know, for Minnesota, everybody knows by now the way that that game ended with the Minneapolis Miracle. You know, Case Keenum in the second half made several very, very bad throws. The one that got picked, he had some back foot throws before that Stephon Diggs touchdown that, you know, could have wound up being intercepted by the Saints. His decision-making was just not particularly strong in the second half. And Nick Foles, you know, statistically it wasn't a bad performance from him, but the eye test told a little bit different of a story. Some wobblers, balls that were tipped, balls that were nearly picked. So, as you mentioned, I think we do see a very conservative game plan here, and this game probably does come down to, you know, a sack and fumble or a bad interception or something like that. And when I get a situation like that where I don't know which quarterback it's going to be because these are both very talented defenses, I can't play this game. You know, even with a low total and a low spread, it feels pretty high variance in the sense that, you know, anything could happen. It'll wind up probably near the number and near the total, but anything could happen to either one of these two teams. And at this stage of the game, I don't want to get invested in that. I'd rather save my money for something where I feel like I have an edge, like the prop betting market for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a great point. Before you said it, I was thinking the same thing. Boy, for a game that looks like it's going to be very conservative, low scoring, it does have a lot of high variance because of the two quarterbacks. I think it's relatively sharp handicap. I mean, one of these quarterbacks could have a 3-4 turnover type of game. And look, you know, we're not breaking mold here and really coming up with a very sharp handicap. I mean, the quarterback that makes the least amount of mistakes, I would say that team has a greater than 70% chance of not only covering the spread, but winning the game outright. I think it just comes down to which Foles or Keenum, what team can overcome a mistake or two, or what quarterback just doesn't make the fatal mistake. And again, it is a very high variance game because it would not shock me if one of the two quarterbacks just lays down and dies here. And that does make it a very, you know, not very trustworthy bet. But look, this time of year, you shouldn't have one of your biggest bets of the year. And I, again, would scratch my head. Anybody that releases a strong pick or anybody that, you know, makes one of their biggest bets, unless they completely see, you know, misperception in the marketplace. And I just don't see it in this particular game.
All right, let's look at some of the Super Bowl look-ahead lines real quickly here. For Super Bowl 52, obviously, if Minnesota gets to this thing, they've got home field advantage, and that has to be factored in. So we'll touch on that a little bit here. If we see both favorites hold serve, that would obviously mean New England versus Minnesota with Minnesota at home. Five dimes right now showing New England -3 over Minnesota, total 47.5. Bet online right now showing New England -2.5. -$1.18, also the total at 47.5. So in that 2.5-3 range, is that about where you would put it?
Absolutely where I'd put it. You know, obviously you probably got to get Minnesota. You know, you probably got to take, I would say, their home field advantage, 4 points right now, but I would take a point off of that just because you're not going to get your typical season ticket holder in there. Higher crowd, probably more of a wine and cheese type of crowd with all the corporations and that. So, I mean, still got to give them 3 points, home stadium, and they'll still have the crowd advantage there, but not a full 4 points, more like 3. So that would make sense to me, and it makes sense. I mean, New England and these 7 Super Bowls that they played in, about every single one of them has been decided by 3 points. Superior edge for them with the Super Bowl experience, superior edge with them, obviously Tom Brady versus Case Keenum. I don't think it's a huge edge at the coaching edge. Now, you got to give it to Belichick, but, man, right now Mike Zimmer might be the second or third best coach in all of football. Don't believe me if you just blindly bet them against the spread since he took over in the last 4 or 5 years. I think they're hitting at like 70% counting the preseason. So, I mean, Zimmer can hold his own for the most part. So, to me, the line should be 3. 47.5, I'd probably lean more towards the under. Minnesota, again, is the type of team that could give New England some issues on the offense side of the ball. And, again, New England's defense, I think, could keep Case Keenum and company in check. So if I got 47.5, I think under 47.5 with a line at 3 would be the pick there.
All right, what if we've got Patriots-Eagles here? Looking at five dimes, the look-ahead line, New England -7, -$1.15. Over at BetOnline, New England -7 flat, so -110 there. And, obviously, this game then becomes a neutral site game. If Philadelphia beats Minnesota, you know, there's no home field advantage to factor in here. What do you think about New England as a touchdown favorite if they play the Eagles?
First instinct would be to lay it. Although New England, again, has never had a, a Super Bowl where that they've laid it on someone. I mean, they've been relatively conservative, played a typical game where it comes down to the wire each and every one of their Super Bowls. So it wouldn't be ideal, but let's just talk line value. Okay, you got a Minnesota team and an Atlanta team laying 3 on the road in Philadelphia in a playoff game where Philadelphia's home field advantage, probably 3 or 4 points. So you're telling me Minnesota and Atlanta on a neutral would be probably favored by 6 or 7 over Philadelphia, and now New England would be laying 7 in this instance against Philadelphia on a neutral? I think just from a pure value ask, I would lay the 7 with the Patriots, although I'd be concerned that they've never really won a Super Bowl by 7 or more points.
All right, if Jacksonville knocks off New England, and we saw Jacksonville knock off Pittsburgh last week, so it's certainly possible. Jacksonville versus Minnesota. Minnesota with the home field advantage here. 5 dimes throwing that number up at 4.5. BetOnline throwing it up at 5.5 with a total of 40. So what do you think about the Jags versus Vikings potential matchup?
Probably at that point a slight lean on Jacksonville. You'd have to give them huge, major respect for beating Pittsburgh and New England on the road. Two very similar style teams, very low total, inexperience as far as Super Bowl. Although Coughlin, the guy running the show there, has got some experience. I just think with those two type of defenses, I wouldn't want to lay anything more than 3, 3.5 in a game. So I'd be on the take there with Jacksonville plus the 4, especially getting more than 4 points. I'd lean with the Jaguars.
All right, one other possible matchup, obviously, here. That would be Jacksonville taking on Philadelphia. Interesting line in this one. Jacksonville, 3-point favorite, plus $1.05 over at 5 dimes. Jacksonville favored by 2.5, minus 115 at Bet Online in a possible matchup against the Eagles. So how about that one?
Yeah, that one seems a little steep to me. So I would probably lean with the Eagles in that regard. And I would have it closer to pick them. You got two defenses that are pretty much top 5. Quarterbacks would probably even each other out, although I'd probably give a slight edge to actually Nick Foles in that particular instance. Neither team really has much Super Bowl experience. For the viewership, I hope that's not the matchup we get, to be honest with you. Jacksonville, Philadelphia. Bortles versus Foles just doesn't move the needle much for me. I would, again, be on the underdog there, the Eagles plus the points.
All right, and of course, we'll see what happens with these numbers, how they get adjusted based on Sunday's outcomes. If Jacksonville blows out New England, you're going to see an adjustment to those look-ahead lines. If New England blows out Jacksonville, maybe New England becomes an even bigger favorite regardless of who they play. So, we will have some recency bias in the Super Bowl line. That's something that we'll talk about on next week's shows. But, Brad, let's spend a couple of minutes on college basketball here because I know that you've kind of transitioned over to that a little bit. A couple of intriguing matchups here tonight, both 9 o'clock Eastern time tip-offs. Let's start with what may be the biggest game of the evening here between St. Mary's and Gonzaga. Gonzaga, 7.5, 8-point favorites, game 559, 560 on the board. Little West Coast Conference action tonight.
Yeah, and look, it was a really marquee matchup last year with Gonzaga. Obviously, ended up making the national championship game. Won and covered and really blew out St. Mary's all 3 games, decided by double digits. They pretty much have owned the series. And 2 dominant teams. This is the first game as far as conference matchup goes that you can get an idea where these teams are at because, this is the first time St. Mary's has been a dog all year. They played a really weak schedule, bottom 100 out of 350 teams in the country. Gonzaga's schedule a little bit tougher, but, this is the first time they have laid less than 14 points since mid-December, a game that they lost outright to San Diego State. So a rare, relatively tight line for them, single-digit line. I just look at Gonzaga. They've owned St. Mary's over the last couple – not only last year winning, covering all 3 – but really, in this West Coast Conference, they've owned them. And you look at the defensive edge that they have, it's far superior. You just go off the KenPom adjusted defensive rankings, number 17 versus 128. So significant edge there, throwing the home court. Now the money's against me. I will put out there, it looks like, although a little bit of money has shown up here in probably the last half hour on Gonzaga, because the line was 7, now it looks like it wants to go to 8. I'm still leaning with the Zags. I got the game power rated at 10. I like them to cover the spread for the 4th consecutive time over St. Mary's.
All right, and then we'll look at the other 9 o'clock tip-off here. That's game 557, 558. USC takes on Oregon. Oregon opened a two-point favorite. They're up to 3.5 or 4 out there in the marketplace, depending on where you look. And Oregon's a team that kind of intrigues me from a futures standpoint because they're not playing very well right now, but Dana Altman's a very good head coach. Lots of talent there in Eugene. I think you kind of see what the projected ceiling for this team might be with the line movement here tonight against a similarly talented USC team that has played a little bit better.
Yeah, and you look at it, Oregon's again owned the series, won and covered 4 straight against the Trojans. You know, I power rate all 351 teams. You know, you throw in the home court. I had this game power rated with Oregon. I mean, if you want to go to the 100 point, at 3.28. So I agreed with the initial line move here. You know, 2 was the play with Oregon, in my opinion. Boy, 3.5, 4. Starts getting a little tight for me. I thought they looked impressive back-to-back covers in the state of Arizona last week. That was coming off a stretch where, you know, they had covered 2 out of 10 games. So, you know, the marketplace was down on Oregon. Now you're starting to see some value on them. You know, believe it or not, I mean, this is the first time USC's been a dog since December the 8th. You don't typically think of them as a powerhouse. You look at them, I mean, they've actually covered and played some decent ball. They've covered 6 of their last 9 games, so they've been playing all right. But, man, Oregon with the defensive edge in this one, series edge, that's where the money's at. Although there's some value lost here with the line moving 1.5, 2 points, I'm still going to lean with the Ducks minus the points.
Before we wrap up here, Brad, I do want to ask you, you know, you're so focused on college football, and that goes all the way through the national championship. And, I mean, hell, we started this segment with college football, and it's January 18th. So, you know, in terms of that transition to college basketball where you've got, you know, a larger data set, you've got some things to go off of, a lot of it in the non-conference. You know, there haven't been a ton of conference games for you to incorporate into your rankings. How's that transition going for you? I mean, do you feel like you're in a pretty good place with your numbers?
Yeah, I do think I'm in a good spot with my numbers, and I've actually been pleasantly surprised with them with my initial set I put out a few weeks ago. You know, I've had a winning start, so, I mean, when you come in relatively cold, there's always a concern there that the market's way ahead of you, but you know, one thing that I've noticed, and I'm going to put it towards the future and look and see if it carries over to next year, and I'll give a tip of the hat to your next guest, Ralph Michaels from Cal Sports and Wager Talk. One thing that he's really identified where there's been some value this year is you just go off of strength of schedule differences, and it makes a lot of sense because a lot of times teams, you know, fatten themselves up on a relatively weak non-conference schedule. The other team, you know, might be sitting at 500 or below 500, but their strength of schedule difference, once they get into conference play, there might be a difference of 100 spots or 200 spots if you just go off the KenPom strength of schedule rankings. And he's used it and had a very successful start this season. And the last few weeks I've been using it and have had great success. So that's something to keep in mind anytime you start jumping really into conference play in the month of January, and something to take advantage of, because the marketplace, for the most part, just sees a couple of teams, just looks at records. And I'll use an example from the other night. Drake was playing Northern Iowa. The public was all over Drake, who was, you know, at the top of the Missouri Valley Conference. Northern Iowa, you know, with not such a good record, but Northern Iowa played a much tougher schedule. And that was one where the pro side, including one of your guests on there, Brian Leonard, was on Northern Iowa. And I can just tell you, I walked into a casino and there was a lot of people talking about Drake that I was overhearing. I'm like, oh my goodness, that Northern Iowa play, that's going to be a winner, and ended up being. So that's one thing to keep in mind here. If you're not understanding a line, check out the strength of schedule, because there's probably a reason why. And if it's still not reflected into that line, man, there's some value there. And another thing that I've been using and had success, it's same as football. I love defensive superior teams in the home underdog role. Used 3 of them last night. Texas, I used Rutgers, and Alabama all had, you know, similar or even stronger defenses. They're catching points. They're at home. That's been a go-to philosophy for me, not only in football, but as basketball as well.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, we talk about it each and every week, and I know it's going to sound like a broken record, but I'll tell you, you can get some great value right now, meaning if you want to sign up for the newsletter for not only the rest of this season, but also an early bird special for next season's football action, you can do so for $49. That's the rest of this year, all of next year, $49 for a weekly newsletter. You get power ratings on all college football teams. You get game write-ups on every single college football game. You know, it's probably just worth it in itself for all the future tickets that I put up as far as not only college football, but the NFL as well. And the NFL last 3 years has actually performed better on a week-by-week basis during the regular season than the college. In fact, number one in the country as far as all the newsletters out there, 57.5% winners in the NFL blindly, about 150-game sample size. So $49. It's called the Powers Picks newsletter. You can get it for the rest of this year and next year. Go to bradpowersports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Take care.
Really strong stuff there from Brad Powers of bradpowersports.com. One more guest here for this Thursday edition of the show. Go ahead and bring him on. That is Mr. Rolf Michaels from wagertalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Thank you.
Good to have you back on the program here with us. And let's go ahead and dive right in, and we'll start with the NFL playoffs, AFC championship game here this weekend. New England favored by 8.5, pretty much the consensus line out there now. Couple of eights, couple of nines, nobody at 9.5 anymore like we saw yesterday. What do you think about the action we've seen thus far?
You know, I think the action is, you know, obviously people are on the defensive team. People love playing against New England, just like a lot of sharps like playing on the Browns. I think Jacksonville's run is over. I think last week was the perfect storm. You had a Jacksonville team that had confidence going to Pittsburgh. Of course, they had picked off Ben 5 times in the upset at Pittsburgh. And they had a Pittsburgh team that was basically, I believe, overlooking the Jaguars and looking towards facing New England. Now you have Jacksonville on the road for the fourth time in 5 weeks. You have to remember they also had to play the first week while you have a much fresher New England team who had the bye week. And again, let's go back and remember where these teams came from. You have the Patriots, who are now making their 7th straight AFC championship game appearance, while Jacksonville is only the 2nd team in the history of the NFL since they went with the seedings that won 3 or fewer games the year before and now is in a conference championship. If you're a Jags fan, I will tell you that the only other team to have done that was the New Orleans Saints in 2006, and they actually won the Super Bowl. But I look at New England, and I heard you and Brad talking about their defense and what they've done down the stretch. But what people aren't talking about is the defensive front of the Patriots. They had 8 sacks last week against Tennessee, and in their last 4 home games, they've had an incredible 25 sacks. That's 25 sacks in 4 home games for the Patriots. I think New England's the side in this one.
And it's also interesting, too, to think about the fact that the Patriots, who, you know, we've had Joe Everett on the show here throughout the season, and we've talked about this a lot. The Patriots just don't really have a ton of team speed, especially in the back 7. They're not as athletic as they've been in the past. So, you know, it kind of affected them early on in the year as they were trying to figure out what they wanted to do, how they wanted to scheme this defense. I think that's a clear sign of the progression that they've made to get 8 sacks against a mobile quarterback like Marcus Mariota. I think it shows that, you know, maybe they have figured this thing out a little bit, solved that puzzle that was a problem for them early on in the year. And I think it's an excellent point by you that, you know, you're buying on an offense that you know is already very good, but now you're buying on a defense that's trending up as well.
You know, and you have to remember that the Jaguars have one of the best sets of cornerbacks in all of football. So when you have a wide receiver-heavy offense like Pittsburgh is, those cornerbacks can shut down the wide receivers. New England's strength is throwing to Gronkowski, throwing to the running backs. They don't have the linebackers that can cover those facilities for the Patriots. So while the Jaguars have been able to shut down a lot of teams, New England's the exact offense that has caused them trouble. You know, and just an outlier, this really doesn't have much to do with the game for me, but I like bringing up interesting facts just so people can put it in perspective. You know, from our friend Mark Lawrence and the Playbook newsletter, when a playoff team scores 40 points or more like Jacksonville did last week, the following game they are 4-25-1 against the spread. So only 4 times in 30 games as a team scored 40 points and won the game and then covered the next week.
That is really interesting. I mean, the devil's advocate point that I would make is that, you know, if you're going to hang a big number like that, you probably have an inflated line the following week. For Jacksonville here, you know, they're playing New England, where you don't get a whole lot of respect because New England's covered 28 of the last 36 games that they've played. So I wonder about, you know, how applicable that trend is here to this game. But I do think that, you know, you kind of run into a situation here where, you know, people start thinking that maybe this Jacksonville offense is the offense that put up a ton of points in the regular season. Like I've said throughout the week, they're very good in the red zone. But, you know, if they don't get as many red zone opportunities here, if they don't get those turnovers, give themselves more possessions, you know, it's going to be very hard for them to sustain a high level of offense.
Well, let's remember, Jacksonville, while they scored 45 points, they got outgained 545 to 378. They only had 22 first downs and 378 yards. So, again, it was a very misleading point total because of the turnovers.
And, again, I mean, you're talking about a situation where, you know, people are really focused on how Minnesota won the game. And you know, even the week before I talked about, you know, did Kansas City lose or did Tennessee win? And you don't hear a whole lot of people saying that, you know, that comparison between Jacksonville and Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh should have won that game. If they convert a couple of fourth and inches, you know, they should have won that football game. They made some very bad clock management decisions late in the game as well. You know, you run up 540 some odd yards, you're supposed to win that football game. So, you know, Pittsburgh had some self-inflicted woes to where they still could have overcome giving up 45 points and having that short field and the strip six touchdown. So, you know, that's something that people aren't really talking about with Jacksonville this week, I don't think, is that, you know, yeah, they scored 45 points and their defense was exceptional throughout the year, but you could make a very compelling case with a lot of evidence. They should have lost that game last week, and this should be Pittsburgh versus New England again.
And yeah, I completely agree with you, and perhaps I can put my name in the hat for the offensive coordinator position for the Steelers, and I'm going to bring in a play that they've never heard of, which is the quarterback sneak with the biggest quarterback in the NFL, but that's another story. And again, you know, let's just preface this statement by saying Jacksonville is on the road for a fourth time in 5 weeks, where New England has played their last three games at home and had a bye. You can't get a bigger scheduling situation than that as well.
When it comes to between the lines, both in the NFL and college football, I mean, outside the lines, there are a lot of things that piss me off. But between the lines, the one thing that pisses me off the most about the NFL and college football is when it's third and one or fourth and one and you're in shotgun 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I cannot for the life of me understand that. Put something in where you've got an I formation or where you just line the quarterback under center. Practice it every damn day in practice. Get your 1 yard, extend the drive, move the chains. Like, this shouldn't be rocket science.
I completely agree with you. And to some degree, I understand in the college game, there are some teams that a quarterback never lines up under center. They're in a shotgun every snap from spring practice through their bowl game. But in the NFL, that's not a case. Big Ben, I'm sure, takes half the snaps under center and the other half, you know, in the shotgun. So for an NFL team, it's completely inexcusable. For college, I'll give them a little bit of a leeway for those teams that never take a snap because it's a very difficult thing to do. Your answer is to practice it during the week, and I can't argue that. But again, in the NFL, I completely agree with you. It's inexcusable, especially with, you know, being able to push it back. You have Big Ben and you put a fullback behind him and you just push him over 1 yard. You're going to get that 1 yard, I'm sure, 98 out of 100 times.
Yeah, I mean, that dude's what, 6'5"? Like, just fall forward with the football. Like, this isn't that hard. Why throw a low percentage? I mean, I get you've got Antonio Brown, and Antonio Brown's going to catch damn near everything, but you know, it's so much higher of a percentage play to just fall forward, get a first down, and go with it from there. But you know, in any event, did you have an opinion on the total for this game? I mean, it sounds like you kind of like the New England side a little bit. Anything on the total stand out to you?
You know, I don't. I would have to lean with the under. And, you know, the reason is that, you know, I figure New England to be in the 13-point range. And I clearly think New England's in the 28-point range to 30-point range. So my numbers have me leaning to the under. you know, one thing last week was very frigid in both areas. This week, that's not the case. It's going to be in the 40s, even at Philadelphia at night. So the weather, at least 20 degrees warmer, that helps the wide receivers. That helps the quarterbacks a little bit. So, you know, can New England put up 35? Yes, that puts it in the over-under range. So if I had to pick a side, obviously it'd be New England. If I had to pick the total, my gut instinct is to lean with the under.
All right, let's go to the NFC Championship game here. Minnesota playing for the chance to host Super Bowl 52 would be the first team to do that. There have been a couple teams that have played close to their home stadiums or maybe even in the same area, but have not actually had it at their every week stadium. So Minnesota looking to make a little bit of history here as a 3-point road favorite against Philadelphia. And as we talked about in the previous segment, Rolf, 3 with extra juice at Pinnacle, Bookmaker, BetOnline, DSI. Looks like we've got a shot at this thing coming down to 2.5 if you are interested in the Minnesota side.
Well, I'm not interested in the Minnesota side. And to me, the Vikings are two separate teams. At home this year, you know, we've talked about it a few times where, you know, their crowd and the noise they generate is worth 4, 4.5 points at times, and it causes an offense to struggle, and they can make a team one-dimensional. They were the number one team in the NFL. They were plus 126 yards per game at home. And the reason they were so good is because that defense allowed 58 yards per game and only 2.8 yards per carry. So if you're going to make an NFL team one-dimensional where you can shut down the run, you're going to beat every team at home like they did, except for Detroit early in the year. The difference is on the road, they allowed over 100 yards rushing 6 times. That was in 6 of their 8 road games. On the road, they allow 112 yards per game and 4.3 yards per carry. A much different team. They're not forcing a team to be one-dimensional, allowing over 100 yards per game rushing. So in this situation, I just think Minnesota is getting value from what they've done at home, and this line is certainly too high for me. I would make the game pick 'em. I'm certainly an Eagles fan in this game.
Well, and it's fascinating to me that given the way that Minnesota won, given the fact that they have one less day of not prep time because they didn't know who they were going to play, but you know, they have one less day of recovery time. You know, it's kind of surprising to me that this number was 3.5 when it opened. I mean, I think if you put it at 3, kind of let the market decide, that makes some sense. But for Minnesota, very emotional win, short week, hard to get back to work. Not short week, but hard to get back to work on Monday. Plus then, you know, you've got additional media requirements when it comes to this time of the year. So, you know, maybe late in the week, you're not doing as much in terms of prep and practice and all that. So I was very surprised to see 3.5. I would not be surprised to see 2.5. But I do think this line probably does end up closing 3 with the juice kind of, you know, probably on the Philadelphia side, like plus 3, minus $1.20, something like that.
Yeah, you know, and now you have Case Keenum going on the road. And, you know, we don't talk about the Philadelphia defense much. Everyone talks about Minnesota's. Philly's defense was number 4. But at home, they were the dominant team. They are only allowing 281 yards per game at home, and they're only allowing 3.1 yards per carry. Well, when Latavius Murray is only averaging 3.8 yards on the season, Jerick McKinnon's only averaging 3.8 yards per season, you're going to put some pressure on Case Keenum. Now Case Keenum on the road in a pressure situation hasn't faced that in a long time.
All right, let's transition over and talk about the NBA a little bit here. We don't talk too much about the NBA, but I did just want to get some overall general thoughts from you on maybe some things that you've picked up this season that have worked out really well for you.
You know, I do the NBA stat sheet daily at Wager Talk, and it's really just opened my eyes to the NBA that, you know, when we're talking the NFL and we're talking college football, the variance from top to bottom in college football is so big that people try to translate that into the NFL, and you don't. And the same thing holds true in the NBA. Any team can beat any other team in the NBA. From top to bottom, you probably only have a 15-point difference from Golden State to, say, Sacramento. And then you look and you say, well, these teams are so strong at home. You know, you look at last year's, you look at the last few years, the championship teams. Golden State this year, 16-6 straight up at home. Clearly not a great record. The Cavs at home, 15-5 straight up this year. Not great. But the Cavs are one of the most incredible stories in the NBA ever. While they're 15-5 straight up at home, the Cavs are 2-16-2 against the spread at home. They tend to fall behind. LeBron takes over, scores late, has a big fourth quarter, gets them the win, don't cover. Let me repeat that. 2-16-2 playing on the Cavs this year at home, something you certainly want to fade.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's fascinating. I talked with Brian Leonard about that yesterday, and he had a lot of thoughts on it. And, you know, I actually, and I don't know if, how you feel about this, but I actually want to look to back the Cavs tonight. Now, I may regret that tremendously by the time this game's actually over with tonight. But to me, this feels like a spot for them where traditionally they don't care about playing teams like Orlando. They're just not going to show up and play them, especially in the regular season where, you know, they know the regular season doesn't matter a whole lot. There's something about this spot between, you know, all the reports of the players not loving the composition of the roster with the fact that they gave up 127 points to this Orlando team last time out. Something about this spot wants me to back the Cavs because, as you mentioned, they're 2-16-2 at home against the spread, and they're still laying 10.5 here. You would think an adjustment would be made at some point. It doesn't look like there's been one.
Well, you have to remember, though, they are playing the worst team in the Eastern Conference. Orlando's 13-31 on the season. That ties Atlanta for the worst record in the East. So, you know, it has something to say when you've been the best team in the Eastern Conference for the last 3 years. You're playing the worst team, and you're only laying 10 points. Again, but the Cavs the last 2 weeks, take a look, you know, 1-4 straight up, 0-5 ATS. And they're just a team that I've had the same thought as you. I've tried to find situations where I think there's no way they don't come out motivated and play this game. But I've just learned to not worry about it. Don't try to pick a spot and try to play on a bad team and try to figure out when they're going to be good. Just let them become good and then back them at that point. So, you know, as my best bet in the Wager Talk NBA stat sheet today, I did use Orlando plus 10.5. And, you know, again, it's that the stat sheet is a little different. I'm not looking at injuries. I'm not looking at situations. I'm just taking the information that's on the sheet, figuring out what the best bet is for that. So it's a little bit different. But I've learned with the Cavs, I'm not going to step in their way. If they become a power again and start to play defense, they're going to have to play defense before they can cover games. And until they do that, I'm not going to back them.
All right, so let me ask you about this here. As you mentioned, you know, you feel like from doing the stat sheet that you put together, your spread from 1 to 30 in the NBA would be probably 15 points on a neutral, you know, maybe give or take a half point or a full point, depending on, you know, if Golden State's fully healthy and all that type of thing. Obviously, that's not the situation in college basketball where you could have teams that are favored by 30 or 40 over somebody, you know, with regularity in terms of the non-conference portion of the season. So how do you handicap the NBA differently from college basketball? I mean, do you use the adjusted efficiency metrics? Does that lose some of its luster because, you know, you've got 10% of the teams in the NBA that you have in college? So, you know, there's not as big of a gap. So maybe those adjusted numbers don't mean as much. What factors in the most to your NBA handicap?
I look at current form. And, you know, on the stat sheet, it has what they've done the last 2 weeks. In a period of 14 days, teams are going to play between 5, 6, sometimes 7 games, and you get what their records are. I have the ATS and the over-under records. It gives you their average 0.4 points against, the average line, and the average over-under line. So when you're comparing what they've done, take a look at what the teams have done in current form. You know, the Indiana Pacers tonight are traveling to Portland. Indiana's 5-1. Straight up and against the spread the last 2 weeks. The average line is minus 1.8. So that's pretty good. You know, you're basically a pick 'em in 6 games, and yet you're 5-1 straight up in ATS. on the road. They're 2-0 straight up in ATS. Tonight they're playing a Portland team that over the last 2 weeks is 2-5 ATS, and that was with an average line of 0.9. So they were an average of a 1-point dog in that game. In the average score, 112 to 111. They've won those games by 1 point per game. And at home, they're 1-2 ATS with an average line of minus 6. So in current form, I look at the Pacers tonight, and the way they're playing the last 2 weeks, the way they've played on the road the last 2 weeks, versus an opponent who's played poorly in both situations. Current form in the NBA, teams go through their winning streaks and losing streaks, but I found the two-week period to be just about the right amount of time to try to catch teams that are hot and continue to bet on them, and teams that are cold and continue to fade them. So to me, current form, looking at the last 2 weeks and looking at situations. So, you know, you get a lot of back-to-backs in the NBA, fewer this year because they set out the schedule, but when you have those back-to-backs and third road game and four nights, I think now there's more value finding those situations and playing against them.
And there was an example last night with New Orleans and Atlanta, and this is one that I talked about with Brian Leonard, is that New Orleans was up by 15 at half. They were up 60-45. They scored 10 points in the third quarter. And that was a spot where New Orleans was in a back-to-back. Davis and Cousins played significant minutes in that overtime game against Boston. So if you took Atlanta with the short dog price at home catching two because of the spot, you know, it didn't look great at halftime, but in the second half, New Orleans really fell apart. So, you know, again, you try to look for those different types of situations that are out there. I think situational handicapping is a great tool in the NBA and the NHL. But one thing I've come to a realization about is, you know, it's hard for me because I'm a baseball guy. I believe in sample size because you need significant sample sizes in baseball for statistics to be really relevant. I've had a hard time wrapping my head around the streaky nature of the NBA and the NHL, and you just talked about recent form being a big factor in your handicap. That's an adjustment that I've had to make because I'm a believer in sample size. I'm a believer in what happens over the long term being, you know, what's going to happen, regression to the mean. In the NBA, it is a very, very streaky league, and I'm finding that out this year, and I think it is something that can be advantageous for you, you know, to start embracing that, and it sounds like you have.
Well, and, you know, streaks, make sure you're separating win streaks and ATS streaks. You know, teams that are playing good defense can still lose games and you continue to cover, and that's where you're getting value. You know, when you have an NFL team that covers 4, 5, or 6 games in a row, the world knows about it. When you have an NBA team that covers that many, it's not. It's a secondary sport. It doesn't get the same coverage. We certainly don't have many venues where we're talking about ATS numbers in the NBA. So when you get a team that perhaps isn't winning the game straight up, but they continue to cover because they're out playing good offense or good defense, that's where you continue to get great value because, again, it's underreported, and Vegas just doesn't make those adjustments because people don't follow those type of trends like they do in other sports.
All right, let's transition over to the college basketball side here. Then I got three topics I want to touch on with you, a couple of conferences to take a look at, and then Wichita State is what I want to start with here. The Shockers get shocked at home last night. They lose to SMU, their first loss as a member of the AAC in conference play. Is this a sign of things to come for Wichita State being in a tougher conference, or was this just, you know, one of those one-off games that happens from time to time?
Well, you know, when I did my preseason college basketball guide, I made Wichita State my number one team, and I'm really not that far from not liking them in that role anymore. We've talked about the Shockers, and I said I expected them to have 5 or 6 losses this year. Why? Because they're in a new conference. That means every team they play this year, they're having to prep for them the first time. They're having to go into venues they've never played. They're having to learn about the coaches, learn about the coaching tendencies, learn all these new offensive and defensive schemes. That's very difficult to do. On the flip side, SMU last night is in conference play. All they had to do was refresh themselves on all the teams that are in the American Conference and then learn one new team which is Wichita. For SMU, they were very excited to go into Wichita, this new team that is it might win our conference and knock them off. Wichita has a bullseye on their back. But again, SMU is a top 35 team. Wichita State's losses this year against Notre Dame, when they had both players healthy, they lost that by one over in Hawaii. They lost to Oklahoma at home, 91-83. And then they lost to SMU. So the three good losses, nothing wrong with that. And you have to remember that Wichita State is just getting healthy. Marquise McDuffie is just back. He's only played six games now. He only played 15 minutes. He was the Missouri Valley Conference runner-up for Player of the Year last year. He led the Shockers in scoring and in rebounding. He had a stress fracture in September. He just came back a couple games ago, hasn't started. Again, they're upping his minutes. He played 15 or 18 minutes in the SMU game. When they have him back at the end of the year, having been battle-tested with all these new teams, all these new coaches, I am certain that I'm going to have the Shockers as one of my teams to at least go to the Elite Eight and further, so I'm not worried about them at all.
Well, and I think you have to look at it, too, here. I mean, this looks like it was just one of those games where everything just didn't work out for Wichita State in that they shot 54% from the floor, 37% from three, very respectable there, had some trouble at the free throw line, only made 7 of 12. But SMU was 30 of 47 from the field, 50% from three. They were 11 of 22 from distance. So maybe this is a sign that Wichita State's defense needs to make some adjustments to playing in the AAC. And of course, on the heels of that close win over Tulsa, you know, maybe there is something to it here, a little bit of credence to that point that they are struggling a little bit here in the middle of the conference play season. But still, how often is a team going to shoot 64% against you and only win the game by five? So, you know, are you looking to come back on Wichita State here with them coming back to earth a little bit? They play at Houston on Saturday, or will you wait and let them sort of figure this thing out first?
You know, we'll see. If they come a dog against Houston, I will certainly back them. Wichita State actually has the longest road win streak, true road games in the NCAA at 11 straight, and they're very proud of that. And they actually, to them, it's a battle to go to these venues and try to win. You know, right now they really haven't been tested. They took care of Houston earlier this year. They played on January 4th. They beat them 81-63. So they handled them pretty easily. Again, you know, I would say Wichita State has a lot to do. They're very similar to the Cavs. Isaiah Thomas, a player who's going to be one of the best players on the team, comes into the lineup, and everything gets changed because he's in there. The same thing with Marquise McDuffie. Now that he's in the lineup, they're learning how to play defense again. They're learning how to switch players with him again. So depending on the Houston situation, if they come a dog, I'll certainly back them. But again, we'll have to see what happens with that line on Saturday.
All right, last week we talked about a couple of conferences, so I want to do the same thing here this week, and I want to start with a very, very name-brand conference, a power conference in college basketball. That's the ACC. You've got Virginia, Louisville, Duke, Clemson, North Carolina up there with, you know, decent records here in conference play. You've got Georgia Tech in there. Georgia Tech's got a big game here tonight against Virginia, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. But what is your structure in the AAC? What would your hierarchy be in terms of how you have, you know, some of these top contenders rated?
Oh, I'm a fan of Virginia. I have them as the best team, and, you know, they've always been able to play defense, and they always have the number one, two, or three adjusted defense in the country. But now you got Devin Hall and Kyle Guy. You've got a couple guys that can score for you as well. You know, I'm a complete Virginia fan, and I put the ACC in three levels. I put Virginia on the first line with Duke and North Carolina. You know, Duke at 16-2, North Carolina 15-4. A couple issues with what they lost, but when you have that coaching, that pedigree, those players that know how to get better as the season progresses, I clearly think those are on the A line. You know, on the B line, just below them, Clemson's making their move, but again, until they learn to win some big games on the road, I have Clemson, Florida State, Louisville, Miami, and Notre Dame on the next line. Notre Dame was a team that might have been on the top line, hence the two injuries they had. And with Bonzi If Bonte comes back healthy, Notre Dame may be able to move up to that first line. But, you know, you have the teams, again, Clemson, Florida State, Notre Dame, Louisville, Miami, teams that can beat anybody at home, but teams that, when they go on the road, have yet to be able to be consistent and win. And then Virginia Tech and Syracuse, I mean, these teams are teams that everyone knows. They have unique styles. Obviously, you know, you have the Syracuse zone and you have the Virginia Tech offense, which is just one of the fastest pace there are. So they catch people by surprise. I look at to play those situations when, you know, you play a team that has poor defense and then you got to play Syracuse on the road, or you play a stodgy offense and then you have to play Virginia Tech. Those are the two teams that are sort of the shocking teams that catch people off guard and can pull the big upset against anyone.
All right, so let's talk about that Virginia-Georgia Tech game here tonight. That's game 5:39, 5:40 on the board, 8 o'clock Eastern time tip-off. Virginia's a 7.5, 8-point favorite here in this one, and it's always interesting to see Virginia laying big numbers, particularly on the road, because they slow the game down so much with that great pack-line defense that they play there with Tony Bennett. What do you think about them tonight? I mean, is this a spot where Georgia Tech kind of gets exposed a little bit with that early 3-1 record in conference play? Or is this a little bit tricky of a game here for the Cavaliers going out on the road?
You know, I love Georgia Tech's defense and what he's done this year. I mean, they're holding people, you know, in the low 40s, and they're playing legitimate defense. Josh Pastner really has them playing well. You know, they've already beat Miami of Florida at home. They beat Notre Dame at home. And this total, I mean, this is the lowest total this year, and it might be the lowest total. I think it's 119. I think it opened 112 or 113. And I would still be apt to play this under because of the way these teams play defense and the tempo they had. Now, normally I'd be all over Georgia Tech. And when you have a good home dog getting 7 points, I normally back them. But I'm a little bit gun-shy. On this past Tuesday, I had Cincinnati against Central Florida, almost the same situation. Two elite defenses, two slow-tempo teams. The score was 49-38. I lost that game. I took UCF plus 7.5. So I equate that game to be very similar to this game, where you have the superior team on the road laying 7 or 8 with a total of 120. And since I lost that game Tuesday, I'm not going to back Georgia Tech this week because it's the exact same situation. But if I had to give an opinion out, I would give out Georgia Tech plus the points and under 119, incredibly, in this game. First one to 55 wins the game.
Yeah, and this is one, if you look out there at Bookmaker, it did open 112. It's 117 now at Bookmaker. I think it's 117.5 at Pinnacle. So this one, you know, has gone up a little bit since the open just because it's so rare to see a total get posted that low in college basketball. But as you mentioned, I mean, if there are two teams that warrant something like this, it probably is these two. All right, let's talk about a conference that we haven't talked about really at all on the show here. I think we've kind of mentioned Duquesne a little bit in passing, but outside of that, not a whole lot of love for the A-10 on Bang the Book Radio, so let's change that today. And, Rolf, as this thing currently stands right now, is this a one-bid league with Rhode Island being the only one?
Oh, I think the way it stands now, the way it's going to stand in March, I think it's a one-bid season. You know, last year, seven teams had 20 or more wins. Dayton was the leader at 24-8. They won the conference with a 15-3 record, followed by VCU, Rhode Island, and Richmond. And this year, besides Rhode Island, St. Bonaventure is the only team that can reach 20 wins, and I don't even know if they're going to get there. So this could be an incredible conference going from, you know, seven teams to have 20 wins to only one this year. You know, a lot of it is your top two teams, Dayton and Virginia Commonwealth, had brand-new head coaches and returned only one starter. So you saw the top two teams fold. Rhode Island was there with their three returning starters. Richmond returned three, and St. Bonaventure returned four. So as far as my power ratings go this year, I clearly had Rhode Island. I had them as my number 47 team preseason. My next best team was St. Bonaventure at number 72. So you see the gap from first to second in this. If Rhode Island gets beat in the conference tournament, will they be good enough to get an at-large bid? I don't know. You know, the three best teams they've played, Nevada, Virginia, and Alabama, they lost to. Their best win, Seton Hall and Providence. I don't know if that's good enough to get in. They may get in on reputation, but they'd be clearly a bubble at best if they don't win the tournament as far as an at-large goes. If they win the tournament, clearly a one-team bid this year for the A-10.
And now what about betting this conference in terms of the regular season? Because you've got Rhode Island that does seem to stand out. We'll see how they do when they go on the road to Dayton this weekend, which is a very tough place to play, even when Dayton's not playing all that well. But are there angles that you're looking to play here in this conference? I mean, are there, you know, good home court advantages? Are there teams that are, you know, maybe a little bit better than their records would indicate? Because right now you've got what, six or seven teams that are 3-3 in conference play. You got Bonaventure at 2-3. Duquesne is surprising 4-2 there with Keith Dambrot. Is there an edge to be had in this conference? Is there somebody that's better than they've played, or, you know, is there a team that's got a coach that can get them over the hump?
Well, there's you know, the one thing I've played a few times this year is playing against Virginia Commonwealth. You have the bully finally back down to where he can get beat and get bullied, and it's happened. You know, Virginia Commonwealth lost to Richmond by 15 last night. They went to Dayton. They lost by 27 points on the road against a Dayton team that's probably not even as good as them. You know, so teams that have been bullied by Dayton and Virginia Commonwealth for so long are now getting their chance to bully back. So I look to fade those teams. And Duquesne is a team, again, that's been so bad for so long. You know, now where they are at 13-6, they played a very, very weak schedule. And people are starting to pay attention to them, but they've only played three true road games. They did beat Fordham, which is the worst team in the conference, and then they lost to Virginia Commonwealth and lost to St. Louis. So now that Duquesne has become a public name, Keith Dambrot has gotten his love. And, I mean, between Dambrot and Ohio State and LSU, those are the three best coaching hires this year. They've completely turned around the structure of those teams. Now I'm going to look to play against Duquesne on the road. That won't happen till January the 27th when they go to Rhode Island. So if they beat George Mason coming up on Saturday and beat Richmond and they're 15-6, we're going to get maybe a 9 or 10 point line at Rhode Island. And I'll certainly look to make Rhode Island a top play, and then they'll play George Washington after that. So although we're into January 20th or January, mid-January now, again, Duquesne's only played three true road games, and there's a lot of value playing against them when they play the rest of these road games out.
And this is something I love about college basketball. I feel like more so than any other sport, you can circle some of these games that are coming up down the line, keep them in the back of your mind, remember them, and then if the line is right, look to strike and take advantage. So I love doing stuff like that here on the show. Rolf, what about tonight's card? Anything really stand out for you as a best bet here this evening?
Yeah, let's give out game 524. Not as exciting as the games you and Brad talked about, but it's Florida Atlantic -5.5. And I caught Brad's segment talking about, you know, the strength of schedule. And this is one of these games. You have Florida Atlantic with a better record, 8-9. Against the number 124 schedule. Charlotte is 5-11 against the number 220 schedule. So right there, I make Florida Atlantic probably a 4, 5, or 6 points better. They're at home, and they're only laying 5.5. Charlotte's a team that Mark Price was let go December 14th. They won their next game under their interim coach, and they won two out of their next four games. But now they've lost three straight. They're on the road again, and FIU is a team that had played a horrific five-game stretch where they lost all five games. But this past weekend, they pulled upsets at UTEP and San Antonio. And I love when teams go on the road and pull an upset, but but they don't shoot well. It's not an outlier like you had SMU shooting 64%. They only shot 35 and 38%. They won those road games, hardcore defense, out-rebounding their foes, and now they're coming home against a team that, again, is playing a rare road game and in a situation where they're not a good team. They haven't played a good schedule, and we're getting a very, very favorable line. So game 524, Florida Atlantic, actually, I see right now it's moved up to -6. So that would be the current line in this game.
And I'd be curious to find out, and maybe this is something you can throw in one of those in your college basketball publication there at Wager Talk. You know, we talked about the Pac-12, I think it was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, and we talked about, you know, teams sweeping that altitude doubleheader with Colorado and Utah. I don't think that people realize, you know, UTSA and UTEP are not great teams, but sweeping that doubleheader in Conference USA as a team from Florida, not easy to do. You play that first one here in UTEP in the altitude, then you come back down, play San Antonio, then they're coming right back home. That's a tricky little two-game road trip in Conference USA. And to see Florida Atlantic, you know, win both of those games after that five-game losing streak, or six-game losing streak, I should say, that's really impressive. That's something that, you know, you're not going to hear about on other shows, and something that's certainly not going to get, you know, any media press at all.
Yeah, and again, it's you know, they are in the same, they're the same type of team. They were +6, +7, or +8 in both of those games, but you know, in my mind, they winning those road games gets you to where you are. And if you look at Florida Atlantic, you know, it would have been tough to back them in each of those situations. They had lost six straight games, but in those six straight games, they had played Texas Tech, Minnesota, FIU, their rival on the road, and then they played UAB and Middle Tennessee, two of the best teams in the conference, and they lost those at home. So the situation plays out when you're looking at the schedule they've played and their body of work as a whole. This is one of those situations Brad was talking about. Three more wins against a schedule that's 100 spots better, and the line does not dictate that difference in the game. So clearly a spot where we're going to pull them out. And, you know, something I didn't mention is they have a home game on against Old Dominion on deck, a game they probably figure they're going to lose. So off three straight home losses, this is their only home win potentially with Old Dominion on deck. It's certainly a circle the wagons game for Michael Curry and his team.
All right, how about a best bet for Saturday? Anything you're looking ahead to here over the weekend?
Well, you know, again, taking on what you and Brad had talked about, Brad had a
You're off. You're still with us? I think you might have bumped the mute button there on your mic, so hopefully we can get you back on.
I did hit the mute. I apologize. I'm back. Let me jump back. We're going to bring it back to what Brad had talked about. Brad played on a Texas as a defensive home dog last night, and they had a winner. But Texas has only played three road games all season. They beat Iowa State in overtime, and then they went to Baylor, and they went to Oklahoma State and lost those games. You have Texas playing Wednesday, now traveling to face West Virginia. West Virginia, meanwhile, played Monday, so they have two extra days of rest. They didn't travel, and West Virginia's off back-to-back losses at Texas Tech and a home loss to Kansas. Bob Huggins absolutely laid into the team. I think you're going to have a fired-up West Virginia team that can play defense as well as anyone against a team like Texas, who has a very strong home court presence. But on the road, again, this is only their fourth road game. I think West Virginia handles them easily. I expect the line to be about 10 or 11 in this game. No worries with West Virginia's offense and defense. They get the win and cover against Texas.
Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. You mentioned the stat sheet that you do for the NBA. What else you got going on over there?
You know what? Up Friday will be the new college basketball guide. It'll have my power ratings numbers. It'll have the scoring margins for teams and the rankings in those. That'll be Friday after 12 noon each and every Friday. And again, if you for those of you who are college football fans, I did an underclassman guide. If you go to wagertalk.com, take a look at the NFL and the news. It'll tell you which teams lost the most talent. Some are surprising. There were 25 players that left the SEC and ACC, and three teams will really be affected because three teams lost six players to the draft early. That was LSU, Florida State, and Texas, the big losers this year with underclassmen that declared for the draft early.
Well, you can follow Rolf on Twitter, at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, appreciate your time. Thank you so much, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
Good stuff there with Rolf Michaels and also with Brad Powers there. Really strong Thursday edition of the show. Coming up on Friday, still trying to track down another guest for us. We will definitely hear from Brent at DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. If I can't find anybody to join the show here tomorrow, I'll talk some Major League Baseball, update some of the transactions that we've seen thus far, and also get you ready for this weekend across all of the sports markets. So you may have to hear my voice a little bit more tomorrow, but we'll wait and see who is able to join us. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.